Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're here again to really pull out those key bits of knowledge for you.
That's right.
And today, we're diving into a really high-stakes world. It's all about how EMTs, emergency medical technicians, use medication.
A critical topic. Lives literally depend on it.
Absolutely. And to get a feel for it, let's just drop right into a scenario.
Well.
Imagine this. EMT Nate Quick arrives on scene.
Okay.
He sees a teenage boy really struggling to breathe. He looks pale, sweaty, and there's someone there, clearly anxious, yelling, "He's allergic to bees. I don't know how to use his epinephrine injector."
Wow, intense situation right from the start.
Totally. Nate hears stridor, that awful high-pitched sound from a blocked airway and wheezing. The kid's pulse, weak, fast. He can barely speak.
Classic signs of severe anaphylaxis, life-threatening.
Exactly. So that sets up our mission for this deep dive, doesn't it? How do EMTs like Nate in that kind of chaos assess so fast, know what drug to use, and actually give it? What even is pharmacology from an EMT's perspective, and why is getting it right just so incredibly crucial for the patient?
Well, it's a massive responsibility, no question. Giving meds means you have to be completely familiar with the drug, the protocols,
Yeah.
and it's always under medical direction.
Always.
We're going to unpack, all the layers of knowledge and the strict procedures that make these interventions safe and effective.
Okay, let's start with the basics then.
Yeah.
When we say drug or medication in this context, what are we actually talking about?
Well, fundamentally, it's a chemical substance used to treat or sometimes prevent a disease or a specific condition.
Right.
And the study of these chemicals, where they come from, what they do, how they work, how we use them, that's pharmacology.
Okay.
For an EMT, though, pharmacology isn't just like abstract science. It's the practical knowledge that turns that chemical into a life-saving tool in a specific situation.
Yeah.
That's the key insight, really.
That makes a lot of sense. It's applied science under pressure. And it's not just the drugs they carry on the ambulance, is it? They sometimes help patients with their own prescriptions, too.
That's right. And this is critical anytime an EMT gives a medication, whether it's from their kit or assisting the patient, it absolutely re requires an order from medical direction.
An order. So how does that work? A phone call?
It can be. That's called an online order, direct voice communication with a physician, usually over the radio or phone.
Okay.
Or it can be offline, which means following pre-approved written protocols or standing orders.
Ah, so they have guidelines already in place for common situations.
Exactly. That combination gives them both the ability to handle unique cases with direct guidance and the structure to act quickly and safely using established procedures.
That structure seems essential, especially when you think about patients maybe taking lots of different pills every day. What's that term? Polypharmacy?
Polypharmacy, yeah. Usually defined as taking five or more medications daily, it's really common, especially in older adults.
Right. And EMTs see everything. People taking short-term meds for something sudden, an acute illness, and others on long-term medications for chronic conditions they manage every day. The sheer mix one person might be on must be, well, mind-boggling
It
sometimes.
really can be. And that just highlights how vital correct administration is. Get it right, and the patient can improve significantly, sometimes dramatically.
But get it wrong.
Get it wrong, and the drug itself can cause serious harm, major side effects, or even make things worse. That's why EMTs operate within very strict limits. They only give drugs that are specifically listed in their protocols, period.
Okay, so knowing which drug is step one, but then there's the naming.
Yeah.
Seems like one drug can have a bunch of different names. That sounds confusing.
It can be at first glance. You generally have four types: the chemical name, the generic name, the trade name, and the official name.
Let's take an example, like nitroglycerin.
Good one. Okay, so the chemical name is something like 103 propinatrial trinitrate.
Whoa, definitely not shouting that in an emergency.
Huh, exactly. So the generic name is simpler: nitroglycerin tablets. The official name adds a standard like nitroglycerin tablets, USP, that stands for United States Pharmacopeia.
Okay.
And the trade name or brand name is what you'd see marketed like Nitrostat.
Nitrostat. Okay, I've heard of that. So one drug, multiple names, depending on the context. You have to know which is which.
You do. And just as important as the name is the route of administration.
How it gets into the body.
Precisely. And this raises a key question. Why does the route matter so much?
I guess. how fast it works.
Exactly that. The route directly affects how quickly the drug is absorbed into the bloodstream and starts having an effect. EMTs need the fastest, safest route possible for the situation.
Right, because in an emergency, speed matters. So what are some common routes EMTs use?
Well, for quick absorption without an injection, there's sublingual, that's under the tongue.
Like nitroglycerin spray.
Perfect example. Or tiny tablets that dissolve there. Then there's oral, just swallowing it, like Aspaval or oral glucose for diabetics.
Okay. And activated charcoal is oral too, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you said it works differently.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. You swallow it, but it's not absorbed. It stays in the gut and acts like a sponge, soaking up certain poisons.
Got it. What about breathing treatments?
That's inhalation, getting medication directly into the lungs, like oxygen gas or drugs from an MDI, a meter dose inhaler, or a nebulizer, which makes a mist.
Nebulizer, right. And injections. You mentioned epinephrine.
That's typically intramuscular, or IM, injected right into a large muscle. That's how those auto injectors work, like the one Nate needed for his patient. Gives a quick systemic effect.
Okay. Are there others?
Yep. There's intranasal, which is becoming more common. You use a special device, often called a MAD, mucosal atomization device.
MAD device.
Okay. To spray a fine mist of the drug into the nostrils, it gets absorbed through the nasal lining pretty quickly. Think naloxone for overdoses, sometimes given this way. And there's also subcutaneous, just under the skin, but that's generally slower absorption than IM.
Wow, okay. Lots of options, each with a purpose.
And what's really interesting is how the medications form. Like, is it a liquid, a tablet, a gas? Often dictates the best route. They're designed together.
Ah, so the form and route are linked. Can you give examples?
Sure. You have compressed tablets, like aspirin, designed to be swallowed.
Right.
Liquids for injection, obviously for IM or other injections, like in those epinephrine pens. Gels, like oral glucose for diabetics. Thick, sugary, easy to swallow when you're conscious.
Okay.
Suspensions, like activated charcoal. Those are liquids with fine particles mixed in, so you have to shake them really well before giving them.
Right, because the solids settle out.
Exactly. For inhalation, you might have a fine powder and an inhaler, or a liquid used in a small volume nebulizer to create that aerosol mist.
And gas. Like oxygen itself.
Oxygen, yeah. Probably the single most common medication used in EMS. And don't forget sprays, like nitroglycerin, for that sublingual route. Each form is chosen very deliberately.
Okay, this is a great background. Now let's get practical. Let's talk about some of those specific key medications EMTs use, maybe starting with the most basic one you mentioned. Oxygen.
Right, oxygen. It seems simple, but it's actually a prescribed drug, a medical gas. It's indicated when someone's hypoxic, low oxygen levels, or showing signs like difficulty breathing, shock, poor perfusion.
Or if their SpO2, their oxygen saturation level, drops below 94% for medical patients.
Generally, yes, 94%. For trauma patients, the target is often a bit higher, maybe 95%.
Okay.
But here's a crucial point. More isn't always better with oxygen. Very high concentrations, especially for long periods, can actually have downsides, like potentially reducing blood flow to the heart muscle or increasing harmful free radicals.
Really? So even with oxygen, it's about the right dose for the right condition?
Absolutely. Precision matters.
Okay. Now, let's go back to Nate's patient, the bee sting anaphylaxis. The drug there was epinephrine.
Epi. Yeah, incredibly important drug for severe allergic reactions. It works fast by acting on the sympathetic nervous system.
The fight or flight system.
Kind of, yeah. It counteracts the dangerous effects of anaphylaxis. It constricts blood vessels to raise blood pressure. It relaxes the airways to make breathing easier. And it reduces swelling and leakage from capillaries.
Which is why people with known severe allergies carry an auto-injector, an EpiPen.
Exactly. That immediate dose can be a lifesaver, literally buying them time to get to the hospital.
Okay. Another drug we hear a lot about, especially with the opioid crisis, is naloxone, or Narcan.
Naloxone, yes. Its impact has been huge. It's an opioid antagonist, meaning it blocks the effects of opioids. It competes for the same spots, the same receptors in the brain and body that opioids attach to. It basically bumps the opioids off those receptors.
And the effect.
It rapidly reverses the most dangerous effects of an opioid overdose, especially the respiratory depression, the slowed or stopped breathing. It can also reverse the low blood pressure and deep sedation. People can go from unresponsive and barely breathing to awake and breathing normally in minutes. It's quite dramatic.
Incredible. Okay, shifting gears a bit. What about heart-related issues? Chest pain.
For chest discomfort or pain that might be cardiac-related, so potentially a heart attack, EMTs often administer aspirin.
Just regular aspirin?
Chewable aspirin, usually. The key action here is that aspirin interferes with platelet clumping.
Platelets are involved in blood clotting, right?
Yes. So by making platelets less sticky, aspirin might help prevent a forming clot from completely blocking an artery in the heart. It's about limiting damage and buying time.
Makes sense. And you mentioned nitroglycerin earlier, too. That's also for cardiac patients.
Yes, often for patients with known heart conditions like angina. Nitroglycerin, or nitro, is a vasodilator.
Meaning it widens blood vessels.
Correct. By widening blood vessels, it reduces the heart's workload. It doesn't have to pump against as much resistance. It can also improve blood flow through the coronary arteries that supply the heart muscle itself.
But you mentioned a risk.
A major potential side effect is hypotension, a drop in blood pressure. Because the blood vessels are wider, pressure can fall. And there's a critical contraindication. Nitro must never be given to a patient who has recently taken erectile dysfunction medications like Viagra, Cialis, Levitra.
Why not?
Because those drugs are also vasodilators. The combination can cause a sudden, severe, potentially life-threatening drop in blood pressure. It's an absolute no-go. EMTs have to ask specifically about those medications.
Wow, that's a crucial detail to remember. So besides these major ones, what else is commonly in the EMT toolkit?
Well, they often carry oral glucose, usually a gel, for conscious patients with low blood sugar diabetic emergencies.
Right.
We mentioned activated charcoal for certain types of indistant poisoning. For breathing problems like asthma or COPD exacerbations, they'll have inhaled bronchodilators, drugs like albuterol or levobuterol, given via inhaler or nebulizer to open the airways.
Okay.
Some services might carry basic pain relievers like ibuprofen or acetaminophen, though administration protocols vary. Ibuprofen helps with pain, fever, inflammation. Acetaminophen mainly for pain and fever. Got to be careful with liver toxicity there. And in some specialized cases, like exposure to nerve agents or certain pesticides, what causes cholinergic toxicity, there are specific antidotes like pralidoxim chloride or 2PM and atropine, often packaged together in an auto-injector kit.
So it really is like a mobile pharmacy tailored for emergencies.
It truly is.
Okay, so with all these different drugs, routes, names, potential dangers, how on earth do EMTs ensure safety? How do they get it right every single time under that kind of pressure?
It comes down to systematic knowledge and rigorous procedures. There's absolutely no room for guesswork.
So what's the essential info they need for every single drug?
There are 7 key pieces of information they must know cold for every medication in their scope of practice.
7 things, okay.
1, the indications. What specific conditions or symptoms is this drug actually used for?
Makes sense.
2, the contraindications. When should you absolutely not give this drug? Are there conditions or situations where it would be harmful?
Like the nitro and ED drugs example.
Yeah, exactly. 3, the dose. How much do you give? This is often weight-based for kids, which adds another layer of complexity.
Right.
4, administration. How is it given? The right route we talked about. 5, the actions. What does the drug actually do in the body? How does it work?
Okay, 2 more.
6, side effects. What are the potential undesired effects? Some are predictable, some less so. And 7. Actually, I think I covered the main ones there. Indications, contraindications, dose, administration, actions, side effects. That's 6 core categories. My mistake.
6 key things. Got it. That's still a lot to master for every drug.
It is. And knowing that information is just the foundation, then comes the actual process of giving the medication.
Which involves?
First, always get the order from medical direction, online or offline protocol. Then select the correct medication container. Read that label carefully, multiple times maybe. If you're helping a patient with their medicine, verify it's actually prescribed to them. Check that name on the bottle. Check the expiration date. Never, ever give expired meds. The drug might not work or could even be harmful.
Okay.
Look at the medication itself. Is it discolored? Cloudy when it should be clear? Any impurities? If anything looks off, don't use it.
Right.
Then double check you have the right form, the right route, and the right dose calculated. And after all that, there's one final safety net, the 5 rights. This really answers that question. How do you guarantee safety under pressure? These 5 checks are like the final mental checklist before the drug is given.
The 5 rights. Okay, what are they?
Right. Patient. Am I sure this medication is for this person?
Okay.
2. Right medication. Is this definitely the drug I was ordered to give and the one I intended to grab? Check the label again.
Right.
3, right route. is this drug going to be given the way it's supposed to be sublingual? I am inhaled.
Mm-hmm.
For right dose, is this the correct amount calculated properly for this patient? And five, right time. Is it the right time to give this medication? Is it indicated now? Has it been given too recently?
Patient, medication, route, dose, time. The five rights.
It's a simple but incredibly powerful safety check. It catches errors before they happen. It has to be done every single time.
And then after giving the drug, is that it?
Not quite. The final, absolutely essential step is documentation. You have to record everything accurately.
What details?
The drug name, the dose given, the route used, the exact time it was administered. And critically, you need to document the patient's response. Did their condition change, improve, worsen, any side effects noted?
Documentation is key.
Yeah.
And what happens immediately after the drug is in? Just wait and see.
Oh, no, definitely not. Continuous reassessment is vital. You've just introduced a powerful chemical into their system. You need to watch closely.
What are you looking for?
You're reassessing everything. The mental status, their airway, breathing rate and quality, pulse rate and quality, skin color, temperature, condition, blood pressure, SpO2 levels.
Checking all the vitals again.
Yes. And also asking them if they can talk about their symptoms. Is the pain better? Is breathing easier? Are they feeling anything new? You're looking for improvement, lack of improvement, or any adverse effects. Monitoring constantly.
Makes sense. And where do EMTs get all this drug information? They can't possibly memorize every single detail about every drug forever.
Right. Ongoing learning and quick reference is key. They use resources like the physician's desk reference, PDR, though that's huge. More practically, drug package inserts, information from poison control centers, EMS-specific field guides or pocket reference books, and approved medical apps or websites like Hippocrates.
Okay, lots of backup. So let's tie it all back to Nate quick. He's got the teenager, the bee sting, the EpiPen.
Right. So Nate, following his anaphylaxis protocol, would first confirm the EpiPen actually belongs to the patient. Checks the name on the label.
Verifies the right patient.
Exactly. Then he checks the drug name, epinephrine, the dose on the pen, and crucially, the expiration date. Checks for discoloration in the little window, if applicable.
Right. Medication, right dose, checking integrity.
Correct. Then he administers it via the correct route intramuscular injection, typically into the mid-outer thigh. That's right route. And it's the right time because the patient is clearly having a severe reaction.
Five rights. Check. Mm. He gives the injection. Then what?
Then the epinephrine starts to work, hopefully quickly. You might see the breathing ease up, the blood pressure improve, the hives maybe start to recede. It's often quite dramatic.
That must be a relief.
Huge relief. But Nate knows epinephrine's effects can be relatively short-lived. Anaphylaxis can rebound. So the immediate next step is rapid transport to the hospital.
Right. It's not a cure. It's a bridge.
Exactly. It buys critical time. And during that transport, he's doing that continuous reassessment we talked about. Vitals, symptoms, watching for any changes, being ready to potentially give another dose if protocols allow, and it's needed, all while communicating with the receiving hospital.
Wow. That paints a really clear picture. Yeah. What an incredible deep dive into the EMT's world of medication. It really hammers home the immense responsibility, the depth of knowledge needed.
Mm.
Understanding the indications, the contraindications, doses, routes, forms, actions, side effects for every drug. And always, always using those five rights.
It's a system built for safety in high-stress moments.
Absolutely.
You know, if you zoom out for a second, just think about one single drug, like epinephrine. It can come as a liquid in an auto-injector, maybe drawn up from a vial in other settings, potentially even given via nebulizer in some protocols.
Right.
The specific form and route chosen in those critical seconds. That choice, based on all this knowledge, can be the difference between getting that rapid effect you needed and, well, a dangerous delay.
That's a really powerful point.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it? What does this intricate decision-making process tell us about all the other hidden layers of complexity in emergency care? Things we might not even see that happen every day.
That is definitely something to think about, those unseen complexities and procedures we might take for granted. A great final thought. Thank you so much for walking us through all this.
My pleasure.
And thank you for joining us on the Deep Dive. We hope you leave with a clearer understanding and maybe even greater appreciation for the vital, life-saving work EMTs do with their medication toolkit every single day.